Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, February the 12th, 2010. While the weekly trade ended higher, does it signal a short-term bottom in the marketplace? We'll ask this and many more questions today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Jerry Golke from the Golke Group in Chicago, Illinois. Our panelists in studio today are Jackie Vakes of the Stuart Peterson Group out of Champaign, Illinois, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois, and Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Did you miss Commodity Week on the radio? You can always pick us up online. The address there is willag.org. That's willag.org. We post our Commodity Week programming and all the rest of our ag programming there as well. Visit us online at willag.org.
The 20th annual All-Day Agriculture Outlook meeting is March 9th at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. And we have a dynamite lineup, including Sue Martin, Steve Freed, Chip Flory, Glenn Ring, Joe Persaki, John Bondurant, and Ed Kieser. The cost is $20 and includes a continental breakfast and lunch. Register now at 800-528-7980 and avoid the long registration line. We take all major credit cards. Call 800-528-7980. And we'll mail you your tickets ahead of the event.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This edition, of course, is the Friday, February 12th edition of Commodity Week. Our panelists in studio, Jackie Vakes, Bill Mayer, and Kurt Kimmel. Let's start out with this question. Bill Mayer, what indicator are you looking for to confirm a near-term bottom has put into place in the marketplace? Of course, that's what you're actually thinking.
Well, I guess I'd start with the nearby corn on March corn. I guess I'd like to see a couple of closes above 365. We got close. We got there and touched 365 a couple of times, but couldn't close above it. I think if we can do that, we can probably add another 18 to 20 cents pretty quick. But in the meantime, I think we're stuck until we get that in this 20 cent between 345 and 365.
Jackie Bakes.
I can't agree with you more, Bill, when you look at the numbers. And the other thing that I like to watch is I like to watch puts, and we haven't seen any major gains at all in puts on moves down in the marketplace. Usually a good indicator that the trade is not quite as negative as it had been. So I think that if we can couple that along with Bill's close over 365, I think a good close over $4 on December corn would be a good indicator, too.
I think everybody would agree a close over $4 would be a great indicator. How about you, Kurt Kimmel?
We've been watching the stochastic momentum indicators. They gave bullish trend divergence signals here over the last week, which indicates the momentum's run out to the downside short term. We look at the chart, daily hook reversals up, they've held. I think we just need to keep making some higher highs and some higher lows to develop that trend. It looks like a nice V bottom. The only word of caution is if we take out this last low, we're in trouble.
Yeah, I was a little sarcastic on the $4, but frankly, it's not very far away. The high this week in the March contract was at 368 and a quarter, the low at 353 and a half, settlement price at 361 and a half. It was a dime higher. The December contract at 397 and a half settlement price was up 10 and a quarter. Will it break through next week?
Well, I think it certainly has an opportunity to do that. You know, the biggest thing that we have to keep an eye on, not just on from a technical standpoint, but it's all the outside influences. You know, when we I thought that corn did a great job of holding up this week in spite of the fact that we had problems with Greece and with all the world economies. I think it was supported, and one of the reasons I think it could possibly break through this week is because of the higher usage numbers that we saw that came out on the USDA report. You know, when you see a billion more bushels of grain demand, that certainly should give traders some confidence.
Yeah, that brings up a good point. There was a little bit more than a billion bushels usage, more this year in the marketing year than there was last year. Although producers and the trade has been feeling a little sorrowful for itself, despite that in recent months, is that enough to really give us a boost as we go into a new growing season?
Well, I think that it's certainly supported, let's put it that way. I was thinking this week as I was traveling a little bit, this corn market's kind of like trying to travel across central Illinois this past week. You know where you're going, you know you're going to get there, but it's kind of a long and difficult time to go. I guess I think that the increase in usage is warranted, and I think we're starting to see one of the uncertainties that's still in the corn market is some of the questions about the quality and the protein levels. I'm hearing that some of the ethanol producers are having a little trouble with their co-products, getting the protein levels up there where they like them. Yields may not be quite as good on the ethanol side because of some of the test weights. So I think we still just have a lot of uncertainty on where that usage number is going to end up being.
All right, so let's take a look at some of the numbers as they came out from USDA. A 1.719 billion bushel carryout announced this week, down from the January estimate of 1.764 billion. And, of course, that compares to 1.674 in the last marketing year. Does that extra set of surplus offset the billion bushels extra that we're using?
Well, 1.7's workable. We're not at 2. We have a burden of supply, but we're not super tight down around 1.2. We feel that 1.7 is going to get smaller yet, just as Bill and Jackie talked about. I think test weight is going to have to be addressed with higher usage yet. So you're going to see feed usage go up. You're going to see ethanol usage go up. So when it's all said and done come September, that probably carryout is going to be 1.5 versus 1.7.
All right. Jackie Vakes, you and I have a disagreement on test weight, and I'll take that up with all of you at this point because I've talked with the professionals, and we'll have a disagreement with them as well. I have talked with the professionals, and they tell me that, and we were talking about dairy cattle with Mike Hutchins, that even down to a 44-pound test weight, that it's about pounds and not volume. And so unless there's something else afoot within that test weight, for instance, Don or something else, that it really doesn't matter, that they're eating a pound of feed and a pound of feed, whether it takes up, you know, a shoebox or whether it takes up a great big box is still a pound of feed. So, and I get the same thing from the ethanol side, too. So where do we stand on this? You want to battle it out and talk about it? I know, Jackie, you've got some things to say about it. So what do you say?
Well, our disagreement primarily comes from my background as far as doing nutrition consulting for 16 years and from talking to producers and from talking to some people who sit on ethanol boards who are saying that it is making a difference. I agree a pound is a pound. The thing I don't agree with is how much energy they get out of that pound. You're seeing guys right now up in Wisconsin, Minnesota, and some other places in the West that are starting to feed light test weight corn and have seen drops in production by 8 to 10 pounds, haven't changed anything else in their diet. The key comes down to making the adjustment. And a pound for a pound is one thing. It's understanding how much energy has to be there to be able to produce the milk. So I think what it comes down to more than anything is most rations, whether it's for livestock, whether it's for dairy, are based on statistics that come out of a book. They're not based on actual real tests a lot of times of the product itself. And until the nutritionist makes the adjustments and increases the pounds within the diet, you can't sustain the same amount of milk. So that's my argument on that side.
Yeah, and then the bottom line, I guess the three of you in agreement that it looks like we're going to need to use more corn, whether we agree or disagree.
I don't know that we really know that yet, and I think there's certainly some valid reasons, as Jackie mentioned, that you could do that. I do think that when you look at screening values and that out there, there just seems like there must be a lot of screenings out there. No doubt the quality isn't what it should be in the corn crop this year. I don't think there's any argument about that. You got vomitoxin in some parts of the country, and that really is just staying away from the feed flow completely. So the going to a marketing standpoint, what do you do now? How do you plan for that? I'm not sure we're really going to know that until we get into the summer or late summer, or may never know. We may just see it show up as a you know, lower crop size in the end.
It may get fixed somewhere down the line, and it'll just get fixed. 2 years down the
line? 2 years from now, yes.
One thing we do have to remember, though, and y'all do, is that feed usage is a miscellaneous category, mm-hmm. so we never really will know true feed usage. But the bottom line is, just to add a little bit to what Jackie said, I read a book on grain marketing when I was in school. When I started doing it, it was a whole different story. So what people write and say and what actually happens, sometimes two different things.
How did you like the 100 million bushels that they added to the ethanol side? Do you think they're right?
We feel so. I doubted four, 6-8 months ago, but I think the ethanol industry is back on plus here. If you look at ethanol stocks in general, they've stabilized. We've regained investor confidence on the ethanol side, so we feel it's positive and it's obtainable. But better yet, what the biodiesels initiation came through here this last week is also positive too.
All right.
No question about it. I think when you look at the ethanol side of things, for a little while we were starting to see some profits slip away. But of late, the unleaded certainly has started to pick up against ethanol again, making it much more favorable.
Let's move to soybeans. Here are some numbers for you. USDA carryout now of 210 million bushels. That's down from the 245, so off by 35 million. This week in the bean pit, the March had a high of 950.5, a low at 918 and three quarters. The settlement price at 945, up 31.5 cents. November's 18.5 higher at $9.22. This comes in a month when they're harvesting soybeans in South America. Does it surprise you?
Yes, it does surprise me, and I've kind of been surprised by the soybean market for the last couple months, to be honest with you. Here's the reality. We do have the soybean crop coming in South America. Everybody's expecting it to be big. But typically, we always overstate or understate when that crop's going to be there. And year after year, it seems like we go through that March period before we really start seeing numbers that significantly impact us by the end of March or 1st of April. Jackie had mentioned before some of the outside markets. I think that had a lot of influence in the soybean market this week. But you really have a lot of downside risk in this market. You need to really be on your toes and watch it closely. I think we're within 20 cents, I'd say, of where I'd like to really start making some moves again from a sales standpoint.
May you agree on this one? Are we close to some place where you'd like to make sales or not?
On nearbys or on deferreds?
I think he's talking about probably...
Nearbys?
Nearbys.
At 950 or somewhere in that level. I think that makes sense, especially when you're paying storage on it. You know, it depends upon if you've got it sitting at home or not. But I think when you look at the big picture, we took a real hit on beans last month, primarily because of the fact that they didn't know what was going to happen with this biodiesel situation. And I agree with you, you know, that the renewable fuel standard certainly has helped us. There's, you know, it was just out there in the wind. Are we going to lose all the demand for bio or not? And so I still go back to, and I know some people don't agree, but I still look at the conversion rates. And when I look at a conversion rate for November beans today, it comes out to 687 to China. It still says to me that there's room for demand.
There's still plenty of stumbling blocks in the biodiesel area, and
right.
Some of them are happening in Washington, D.C. in late week, too. So lots to work through on that process. Right. Do you agree on the nearbys and marketing?
Well, I think we got some potential. I think we got two different markets. Yes, I'm fearful of the big South American crop. You look at stocks use ratio worldwide, it's 25%. Carry out worldwide, almost 60 million metric tons. But you look at the U.S. numbers, 210 million bushel carry out stocks. Use ratio down around 6. So we've got a tight U.S. situation, but a plentiful world situation. So if the world doesn't go all to South America, there is still room to bump up in here in the U.S. So don't rule out bump ups here just yet.
And finally, anything to add on the world economy that we ought to cover before we talk in a few moments with Jerry Gahlke?
I think the fact this morning, you know, China was talking about adding some money to their reserves. They've talked about raising the interest rates. This is all going to affect, in the end, I think, how they come in and whether they're willing to continue to buy our debt or not. And to me, that's really the key question long term as you look at the commodity markets.
And Jackie?
Well, I think when you to just defer to that, when you look at China, China consumes 23% of the world's demand for beans. That's pretty dramatic, and I think that's another reason we see it. The other thing I'd like to look at is Argentina and the appearance of some of the government infighting with the farmer coming back into play again. I'd like to know a little bit more about what Jerry thinks about that.
And we'll talk to Jerry Gulke in just about 3 minutes here. Let's go through some of the rest of the numbers that finished up in Chicago on this 12th day of February. In the wheat pit, the nearby March had a high of 503, a low at 476 and a quarter. Settlement price up 13 and a quarter at $4.76 and a quarter. July wheat at 529 and a half, 13 and a half higher. From the cattle pit, the nearby February's had an 89.60 top, bottom at 87.15 for the live cattle with settlement price up $1.95 at 89.32 and a half. The March feeders at 99.75 were up $1.42 and a half. And the February lean hogs on the afternoon had a high price at 68.10 for the week, a low at 66.80, a settlement price at $67.45. Week over week trade was 75 cents higher.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Winter weather held on tightly this week as another winter storm took aim on Illinois, dumping plenty of snow, especially on northern portions of the state. Overall, precipitation was well above normal this week in the northern half of Illinois, while the southern third of the state remained rather dry. Unlike last week, most of the precipitation this week was in the form of snow. The snow is heaviest and most long-lasting in northern Illinois. Midway Airport in Chicago recorded almost 29 hours of continuous snowfall beginning just after midnight Tuesday morning. 12.6 inches of snow piled up at O'Hare Airport on February 9th, setting a new snowfall record for the date and the most for any single day in February. In Lake County, 14 inches of snow were measured in Antioch. Amounts dropped as you headed further downstate, with 4 to 8 inches across central Illinois and only an inch or two along and south of Interstate 70. Temperatures this week were well below normal across the southern half of the state, but surprisingly above normal in northern Illinois. That largely was a result of much above normal minimum temperatures due to persistent cloud cover and precipitation. After another brush with some snow this weekend, especially for central and southern Illinois, the rest of the next week should be dry. Temperatures will continue to average below normal statewide. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, February the 12th, 2010.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio today are Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson Group from Champaign, Illinois, and Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois. Our guest is Jerry Gulke of the Gulke Group. He's a leading provider of risk management tools for agribusiness. Services there include daily marketing consulting, client brokerage services, crop and property insurance, interest rate consulting, a managed bushels program for producers and end users, as well as managed money investment accounts. You can always visit them online at gulkegroup.com. Jerry Gulke, new name, and lots of stuff you folks are doing there in Chicago. Thanks for being with us today.
Yes, thank you for having me. We changed the name, and I guess the word Gulke is, you know, has some recognition in top producer in DTN for all those years, and we had an opportunity to move to Chicago and be part of the action, so to speak. And my daughter, who I've written about a lot on DTN, is out of law school, and she came to work for me and likes this better than the law, I guess. And my son-in-law, who, of course, married my oldest daughter, is working for me and And so we have about four brokers working for us, and we decided to do a brokerage service for clients only. We don't take on anybody that isn't a client to maybe do a better service. And believe me, after 2008, you were wondering if you wanted to do that with some of these. We had some elevator guys and margin calls of 400,000 a day, and I'm thinking if one of those walks, you know, this is not a good deal. But it turned out everything worked out fine, and it's great to be ride the elevators with the brokers because. A lot of them, you know, I did lose my respect, but we farmers and producers and us at the outside of the streets have a lot more, I think, going for us information-wise than what we give ourselves credit for. So.
Well, congratulations on the new name and the move to Chicago and working with family. I think that's really nice. Hey, I've got a question for you. How do you view, by the way, the happenings in the outside markets this week and their potential influence on commodities in the coming year? For instance, the Chinese banking system and the decline in some of those European countries?
Well, I talked with a person, an economist that I met over in Europe from Italy, and he kind of tones down the business about Greece, and his bottom line, he talks about there, and of course he says Portugal's a non-event, they're not a very big economy, but he thinks that, you know, Germany is, you know, if I'm German, and if you know any Germans, they're pretty stubborn. And Germany knows that their currency was the strongest one, and I think they're going to politically they're not going to want to go along with bailing out Greece. However, off the record, they'll probably try to get the IMF to do it, and that may be what comes out of all this. Certainly, it's a problem, and I guess I'm more worried about China. You know, can they? They've done a remarkable job of controlling their economy the way they do it. They've taken a sledgehammer to it, probably. If we did something like this, our markets would disintegrate, probably. But I wonder if they have the expertise and the tools. You know, they don't have the banking system or the Federal Reserve or that kind of thing like we have. Whether if they make a mistake that they can overdo it on the downside, more just like they did it, you know, on the upside, they can stimulate too much. And that would not be good news. I think it was Jackie that mentioned that how much the Chinese use. And, you know, all they got to do is lose 5% of that, and now suddenly we have a problem with getting rid of the soybeans.
Hey, Jerry, I'd like to switch back to the domestic side a little bit more.
Sure.
What do you think the market perception is of the revisions that are going to come out here in March on the crop production and that? And I know you're from, you know, an area where it has a lot of corn price still standing in the field today.
Yeah. North Dakota, and I was there just last week, and I saw a lot of corn standing. And of course, if you're looking in your backyard, you think the government, they're lying to us again. They're after cheap food policy and all that, but they forget the $7 and $8 corn, you know, and the $25 wheat. So, I think, generally speaking, you know, if you take a look and dissect this report we had a lot of residual in there. And residual is when you can't find it, and all of a sudden it turns up. It's kind of like balancing your checkbook, and suddenly you forgot to log in a check and said, well, what happened to all this money? You know, I know it disappeared, but where did it go? And in soybeans, we had a big residual, and the idea there being by the trade is that it was in the truck somewhere, going somewhere, and wasn't counted because we front-end loaded a lot of these exports, and that makes sense. So then we come to find out, we always say the government found those bushels, and the average farmer that doesn't understand will say, yeah, they cooked the books again, when really we've used it, but they'll probably find it and say it was there all the time, but just in transit. In North Dakota, it's similar to the same thing, and what they did up there is they asked the farmer how much production he had left or what he thought he was going to get on it, and I think the farmer up there in North Dakota is underestimating, and then South Dakota and maybe even North Dakota. I've got corn sitting in the field yet. We have a tendency to underestimate the actual production. We want to be cautious, and I suspect that when they come and interview these people, we'll increase the production side of agriculture, and the yield will go up again. It's just a good crop, and I was just there, and, you know, they can complain about, like I did, cost me a fortune to dry it, but the bottom line was, doggone it, I still got a pretty good yield, and that's what they'll tell us, and I think that's the reluctance to realize that it cost $100 an acre to dry it, but we still had a lot of bushels.
Well, I alluded to what I was going to ask you, Jerry. You know, last year we saw a lot of action in the trading market because of the issues with the Argentine government and South America in general. What do you think the impact might be for this year?
Well, it's interesting because I got a note from a client just today from Argentina, and I said, so how do you view things and the prices? And he said, farmers would love to sell beans right now, but they don't have any to sell. Crushers don't have any. Crushing capacity is 60 million. We produced 30 million last year. He said that the crop was in late here, so it might take until April before we see much soybeans. Also, if El Nino's around, we might see a wet fall to deal with. Of course, it's fall harvest time down there. So I didn't realize, you know, it was late in Brazil. And we have to understand that a lot of the, they were out of beans. That's why we sold so many. So the first thing in Brazil, I think they filled the coffers of the crushers, and now we understand that the beans are going to port and there's long lines. Same thing in Argentina. I don't know about Argentina, you know, how to read them as far as, certainly if the price of soybeans drop, you know, another dollar by the time they're harvesting in earnest by the end of March and into April, then they may start the protest. They know they can create some problems doing that, but I don't have a good handle on that. I know the Chinese, the people that we talk to that talk to those, the COFCO and the Jilin people, would rather buy beans from the United States than an unknown entity that is, they don't know if they're going to get them or not. So I think we may see some benefit from that, in that what will Argentina do to us when they know they've got us over a barrel in terms, I mean, Chinese, and they don't like to be boxed into corners, so they may use us as a lever to say, fine, you don't sell it to us, we'll buy some more from the United States.
Hey, Jerry, from a producer's point of view, she would be doing some marketing here at this level, or be patient? What's your best guess here over the next 60 days?
Well, we should have been 100% sold on January 11th, right? we were actually 100% sold on beans, and that's looking good. We actually, I was interested to hear some of you talk about what the market sign is. We were getting buy signals, and if those of you who read Top Producer and so forth, I talk about the MACD index, and it's ridiculed sometimes by people, but it helps me know that maybe I don't want to get long, but I want to scale back my hedges. And so we immediately sold some grain, more grain, right after the report. And now we're basically have reduced, in some cases, only all our hedges in corn back to only 60 to 70% cash contracted. And I'm viewing this with trepidation, that it seems like we're having a tough time getting this thing to turn to get some legs, because we have these massive monthly key reversals that were made in January on all the grains. Basically, I think some of the other commodities, the stock market, the Dow Jones, the NASDAQ, they all had monthly reversals that tells you that you have a problem up there. And I think there's a lot of trying to get back to new highs for the year. Of course, it would take a drought perhaps. But a lot of guys want to sell rallies. And I you know, there's an old rule that, you know, Merle Oster mentioned back when he started Pro Farmer, was that 50% of the time you get back 50% of the drop or the rally, and 60% of the time you'll get 40% back. So I'm looking for some rally to get back probably to that first day that we traded corn after the crop report. And I think that's around that 380 area and so forth. So we may get there. But all my stuff that I use, the trailing stops, the moving averages, the momentum index, is long. And look at what happened today. We started out lower, and we ended up rising in spite of the strong dollar. So I don't know whether the dollar isn't fixated on foreign stuff that is foreign debt, sovereign debt, and that type of thing, and that the commodities aren't reacting to it like they did before. To me, it seems like we get a market that goes higher, and they look for an excuse why it didn't. It was the dollar, and if it went lower, it was the dollar, and the crude oil, and so forth. So we may be seeing a difference, these things parting their ways because of the new supply and demand fundamentals. But we'll have a real good handle on it come March 30th when that crop report comes out.
Jerry, thank you so much.
You bet.
Jerry Golke is with the GolkeGroup.com. Visit them online. A final word now from our analyst in the studio, Bill Mayer, Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois.
Just a couple of crop insurance tidbits for 394 and 911 halfway through the month on the revenue products. And there are some interesting things on some of these products that are worth looking at rather closely.
Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson.
I would expect to see consolidation over the next month or so, and with a bias to the higher side.
And Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities.
Yeah, we feel our best upside potentials over the next 2 to 3 weeks.
And that wraps up this edition of Commodity Week. Something to keep in mind, please do visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.org. Have a good week. I'm Todd Gleason.